The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Today's broadcast comes to you from Jerusalem, the city of peace, our chief joy. We arrived here in the early hours of Monday morning. We'll have more to say about the trip coming up later on today's show. Brad McDonald will be joining me in the next segment as we discuss some of the happenings following the online appearance campaign on Sunday afternoon, and then the trip from there to Jerusalem. But we'll get into that later. For now, I'll just say we've been in Jerusalem over the past day and a half or so. We had a really productive day yesterday. Spent a couple of hours with Dr. Mazar yesterday afternoon. I was thinking of last night already. Last night, we actually, Brad McDonald and I sat down with journalist and author Melanie Phillips, and we interviewed her for about an hour. And before that, she had a nice chat with my father and his traveling party and all of us here at the Noctegal apartment. So that went very well. And speaking of that, by the way, we interviewed her. We're hoping to play that for the program on Thursday. And toward the end of our interview, we talked to her about history. We had said that we told her that we had a real focus on history over the past year or so. And we mentioned our book club, and we mentioned how enthusiastically we've been in support of just encouraging the young people, the students at God's College, to read more and to dig into history. So we asked her about the importance of this in our discussion, and I'll just give you a little bit of a foretaste of what you can expect for Thursday's broadcast. Here's what Melanie Phillips had to say last night about history. Clip two.
It's all about reading, as far as I'm concerned. I don't actually consider myself to be very well educated. I came to the conclusion after 3 years reading English literature at Oxford, I read the wrong subject. I should have read, I'd much prefer to, retrospectively, I would have preferred to have read history, because then I would have understood a lot more about the world. English literature, actually, it broadens your moral horizons. It enables you to understand character, which is important. But I would have liked to have, known about, I would like to have had the knowledge that a history degree would have imparted. And unlike in America, in Britain, we don't carry on doing degrees. It's one degree and that's it. You know, you've had your 3 years, that's it. Now get on with life. Yeah. It's that kind of attitude. Or it was. But subsequently, I do a lot of reading of all kinds of obscure books and works in connection with my journalism. And, it's at different times I've read different things. You know, when I was writing about education, when I was writing about family, writing about multiculturalism, writing about Islam, I read, it takes me in different directions.
Yeah.
But I'm all the time just trying to catch up, trying to sort of, read all the stuff I've not yet got round to reading.
That's Melanie Phillips from our interview with her last night. We talked to her for almost an hour, so you can look forward to that on Thursday's show. We're going to run the entire interview as our program for this Thursday. Well, just backtracking a little bit to Sunday, our online appearance campaign. I got this report yesterday from Edwin Trables, who's managed our campaigns at least the campaigns in Europe, from the Edstone office, and he talked about some of the stats from YouTube, which show that the program had 2,124 views for a total of 76,444 watched minutes. And an average view duration of 35 or 36 minutes per view. So like we were saying on the program Sunday, for the most part, people that tuned in listened to all or most of the broadcast. And we said on Sunday, I think there were something like 1,000 people that stayed on for most of the time, which is really just an extraordinary response coming from so many of you who tuned in to that live presentation. We had said there were at least 18 countries represented in doing a little research yesterday, and this was brought out in the trumpet brief that we sent out last night. But it looks like it was more like 30 countries that connected from all over the world. And as you'll hear in the second segment, we'll go through quite a few emails that come from literally everywhere in the world. Just incredible. We had one from Iran, which I'll mention a little bit later in the show as well. So make sure that you stay tuned to the entirety of this broadcast. And we'll talk about the trip to Jerusalem with Brad McDonald in the next segment. And then we'll also get through as many emails as we can that have come in. Something like 200, 250 messages have come in through email on Sunday during the broadcast. And, of course, following the program, emails still coming in yesterday. A lot of people very excited about the first online appearance campaign. Well, I thought I'd get into just a little bit of news before we talk more about the work in the second segment. Victor Davis Hanson had a piece a week or so ago. I think we might have touched on this previously. But the title for his piece is The Autopsy of a Dead Coup. He talks about the coup, or the slow motion coup. Others have called it, I think Mark Levin's called it, a silent coup. And so much of it is being exposed. Kimberly Strassel, she said at the Wall Street Journal that it's hard to feel confident in law enforcement when a former deputy director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Andrew McCabe, reveals that a small cabal of unelected senior law enforcement officers held meetings on May, or in May of 2017, to plot Mr. Trump's removal from office. It doesn't give you much confidence in these law enforcement agencies, the FBI, the DOJ. It's hard to be confident, to feel confident, when they freely admit now that, well, yeah, sure, in May of 2017, we plotted his removal. We wanted to take him out. Conrad Black at The American Greatness, he says it's the greatest constitutional crisis since the Civil War. An autopsy of a dead coup, says Victor Davis Hanson. He was on Fox News in December. And listen to what he had to say about the Mueller investigation and all that's gone on in the last couple of years. Clip one.
This Mueller investigation is not in isolation. We had, remember, from the day Trump was elected, we were told that the voting machines were fraudulent. We were going to sue. And then there was in a group, remember about the Electoral College? We had to overturn, get to the electors. And then we went to the 25th Amendment that Trump was unbalanced. And then that didn't work. Then we went to the Emoluments Clause. He'd profit even though his businesses had lost $1 billion. And then we gone to the Mueller. And so there's a slow motion, if you will. I don't want to be too psychodramatic like MSNBC guests, but there is sort of a slow motion coup to overturn the elections.
They wanted to overturn the elections. They wouldn't accept the result. And now, just like Conrad Black says at American Greatness, it's all being exposed. And really, even the media, they have no choice but to reveal the fact that it's being exposed. He does a great job, by the way, Conrad Black, of just summarizing what has happened. And it makes you think of that article and others that that my father has written about saving America from the radical left temporarily. Black says the broad swath of the Trump-hating media that has participated in what has amounted to an unconstitutional attempt to overthrow the government are reduced to reporting the events and revelations of the scandal in which they have been complicit in a po-faced, ho-hum manner. Like McCabe, here he comes, and he admits there was a coup. And then the media, they're just ho-hum about it. It says, for more than 2 years, the United States and the world have had two competing narratives. It says that an elected president of the United States was a Russian agent whom the Kremlin helped elect, and its rival narrative. So here are the two narratives. Here's the other one, the rival narrative that senior officials of the Justice Department, FBI, CIA, and other national intelligence organizations had repeatedly lied under oath, misinformed federal officials, and meddled in partisan political matters illegally and unconstitutionally, and had effectively tried to influence the outcome of a presidential election and then undo its result by falsely propagating the first narrative. Conrad Black says, it's now obvious and indisputable that the second narrative is the correct one. It's now obvious that it was all a hoax, that it was all an attempted coup. Treason. You want to look for high crimes and misdemeanors. Here they are. Remember those clips we've played for you from Donald Trump himself. He's saying that this is when we look back on his presidency, this is what he's going to be most proud of. The fact that he exposed this cabal of leaders, this deep state, the fact that he exposed this hoax, all of this treasonous activity, this treasonous behavior, all of these Obama appointees, none of them elected. They're just in there. Bureaucrats, professional bureaucrats. Andy McCabe getting on television saying, yes, we did. We were looking into Trump's cabinet, in fact. We were trying to find cabinet members that would get behind us on removing him from office. Listen to this summary. This pretty well encapsulates the last 2 years. Conrad Black says the dossier of salacious gossip and defamatory falsehoods amassed by a retired British spy from the lowest grade of intelligence sources in Russia, commissioned and paid for by the Clinton campaign and Democratic National Committee, was circulated to the media by high public officials and cited in illegal and dishonest applications to authorize surveillance of the campaign of the other presidential candidate. A special counsel was empowered on the false pretext of the necessity to get to the bottom of the Trump-Russian collusion in the election, of which there was and remains no evidence because it did not occur and was a complete partisan fabrication, just a total lie. We talked to Melanie Phillips a little bit about the news last night. This was before we actually started recording our interview. But she was talking about some of this history and saying how that the British press, they don't even discuss it. They don't cover any of this. They just believe the first narrative, which is that the Russians helped elect Donald Trump. They don't really care to report on the other narrative, the true narrative, the deep state trying to take out a president, refusing to accept the results of the election. Melanie Phillips did say, though, that you can certainly see that same mentality in Britain with the refusal to accept the vote in 2016, June of 2016. I'm talking about Brexit. She said there are the Remainers, just delusional, obsessed. They will not accept the results of that election. And it's the same with the people that hate Donald Trump and that want to remove him from office. It says here, going back to Conrad Black, it says large sections of the media colluded with the Democratic campaign and produced the doctrine that anything was justifiable, no matter how dishonest, to destroy the incoming president's reputation and damage him in public opinion polls, to legitimize attempts to remove him from office. Large sections of the media deliberately deluged the public with stories they knew to be false about the new president. And as Melanie Phillips was saying last night, that's fine. They're justified in doing that because in their mind, the only narrative that matters is that Donald Trump is evil. And so it's nothing for them to print fake news or to tell lies. My father's made this point over the last couple of days in our travels, that it's worse than fake news. They're just outright lies. And like Conrad Black says here, they know they're false. They know the stories are lies. It says, this unorganized but widespread campaign of defamation was taken up by a great number of ordinarily newsworthy celebrities and was accompanied by false, unresearched stories denigrating President Trump's supporters. And it gives even recent examples of that. I won't take the time to get into those details. But look at the way they go after even President Trump's supporters. You had Bill Maher just last week mocking all of middle America, saying that, well, they just want to be like us. They want to be like the celebrities. That's what they desire. They're jealous of us. It says the former intelligence chiefs of the nation under President Obama repeatedly have accused this president of treason, the most heinous of all crimes, and have asserted with the authority of their former positions that the Russians determined the result of the 2016 presidential election. They knew this to be entirely false. And you can go back and look at the timeline. Look at the way President Obama responded to those first reports in August or September of 2016 about Russia meddling into the election. And he said, no serious person can think that they could ever influence the U.S. election. And then, of course, Donald Trump wins and they're changing their tune instantly. Now, of course, yes, they did intervene. Yes, they did meddle. And yes, they did help Donald Trump. They knew it was false. He speaks of Jim Comey and Andy McCabe, Conrad Black. This is in this column at American Greatness. He says, we now know that Comey, despite his higher duty, lied to the president about his not being a target of an FBI investigation, illegally leaked to the New York Times the contents of a self-serving memo he purloined from the government, and lied to Congress by claiming 245 times in one sitting to be ignorant of recent matters that no one of sound mind could have forgotten. 245 times in front of Congress. Conrad Black says, and now we have Andrew McCabe's proud confirmation that he and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein not only continued the illegal counterintelligence investigation of President Trump, but actively discussed methods of securing his removal from office by deliberate misuse of a variety of laws. This was touched on by Victor Davis Hanson in that clip, including the Emoluments Clause, the 25th Amendment to deal with mental incompetence, and the Logan Act of 1799, which has never been used successfully and has not been tested in 150 years. It was anything and everything they could do to get him out. And it was all justified because in their minds, all that matters is that Donald Trump is evil. That's the way that they see it. So anything is justified. It says the disgrace of their misconduct is profound and shocking. Richard Nixon, against whom there is no conclusive evidence that he broke any laws, although a number of people in his entourage did, never did anything like this. J. Edgar Hoover, in 47 years at the head of the FBI and its predecessor organization, never tried to meddle in a presidential election. Those responsible will pay for this, including at the polls. He says, finally, this is Conrad Black at American Greatness, without realizing the proportions of the emergency, America has survived the greatest constitutional crisis since the Civil War. Now think about that. Think about that in relation to what my father wrote last year, saving America from the radical left temporarily. This is, you see God's hand here. It goes deep, this evil. It runs right through the DOJ. It runs right through the FBI. I'm talking about the top tier. The leaders, the ones that were working right in cahoots with Barack Obama. And yet look at what God did to temporarily save the United States. What a just and merciful God we worship. The fact that he's giving the people of America one last opportunity to consider the prophecies of God. The fact that he would intervene. It's like I was saying at the online pack. Well, the fact that these prophecies are being fulfilled, it should sober us. It should trouble us in a good way as we realize just how close we are to the end of this age. There was another article at the American Spectator. You think about that recent story, the hoax, the fake hate crime in Chicago, with that actor hiring those two to come and attack him, to put on the MAGA hats, to pretend that they're Donald Trump supporters, saying that, well, this is a MAGA country, Chicago, of all places. Listen to this one from American Spectator. It says, Terry Pierce was shocked this month when he found a man pointing a pistol in his face. And basically, just to summarize this story, he was wearing a MAGA hat, but you know where he was? He was in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He was in a county that President Trump won by 30 points in 2016. He was in MAGA country wearing a MAGA hat, and someone pulled a gun on him and pointed at his face because he hated it. He hated that hat and all that it represents. Here was an individual whose life was threatened right in the heart of MAGA country, but not from a Donald Trump supporter. It was from someone that hated Donald Trump, and you're certainly not going to see the mainstream media. They're not going to go out and amplify this story, not at all. But they will the other one, even if it's a hoax, even if there's no truth to it whatsoever. One final headline I'll just refer you to. Richard sent this yesterday, this Spiegel piece, a senior journalist there at Spiegel. We talked a fair bit last week about news coming out from the Munich Security Conference there in Germany. But this author or this journalist at Spiegel says that Trump attacks on NATO force Europe to address security. It's Donald Trump. He's the reason that we need to have a big European army. He's the reason that we need our own defense. You know where this is leading. And we've talked about this before. The article speaks of the end of the transatlantic era. This is the end. The end of this transatlantic alliance. It quotes this U.S. State Department advisor talking about some of the things you've heard Herbert Armstrong say decades ago, that when you put everything together in Europe, when you put all of the nations, when they pool their resources, you've got something like a $17 trillion economy. They can build their own army. They can create their own umbrella of defense. They don't need the United States. That's the point. Spiegel says, to be sure, Trump has not thus far taken any military steps that have actually harmed NATO in any way. In fact, the Americans have bolstered their military presence in Europe. He hasn't done anything, really, as far as his actions go. That's what the article's saying, but he has had a lot to say. But when it comes to security, words are the equivalent of deeds. If the U.S. president calls the American nuclear shield for Europe into question, then Europe is no longer secure, so Donald Trump is to blame. It's an easy out, isn't it? It's an easy excuse. Well, he's criticizing NATO. The words matter. So we've got to build our own army. It talks about the road ahead and what they're planning and how that the Germans are going to have to spend a lot more on defense. They're going to have to come together with France and others to build their own nuclear deterrent. And then listen to this conclusion. It sounds completely unrealistic. A European nuclear shield? A NATO in which the Americans are only guests? A European army deployable by the European Parliament? Arms exports conducted according to rules that don't necessarily correspond with Germany's ideas of a values-based foreign policy? And a much greater German commitment? This all sounds unrealistic, but perhaps that's just how it is when a new era begins. She says here, finally, who would have once thought that Germany would ever give up the Deutschmark? We're living in a time when the impossible not only needs to be conceivable, but also attempted. It's time for Germany and the rest of Europe to attempt the impossible. Once they get that army in place, together with the political union, the economic union's already there, and it's exactly as Herbert Armstrong prophesied for decades. When we come back, we'll talk to Brad McDonald about some of the excitement from our trip to Jerusalem on Sunday night, and we'll also roll through quite a lot of feedback that came in response to our online appearance campaign on Sunday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us some feedback, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
And we're back. Thanks for joining us today. I wanted to tell you, as I said at the top of the show, about our journey on Sunday night. Of course, many of you know we had the big online appearance campaign that was very successful, and we'll get to quite a few emails that have come in response to that in just a moment. But following that campaign, we were to leave for Jerusalem at 6 p.m. on Sunday night, 6 p.m. from the Birmingham airport, and the online campaign ended at 5:10 p.m. So as soon as that ended, we closed up shop in the studio, we rushed down to our apartment to grab our carry-on bags, and we're set to head out to the car. But when we got to the living room in my apartment, my father was there on the phone with one of the pilots for the G450. And he said, the pilot did, that the starter motor wasn't working. And so he basically advised us to just stay where we were, to stay at Edstone, until they had more information. So it was a pretty big letdown following the online pack. We were, as I say, very excited about the success of that event. And then a big letdown as we stood there wondering what would happen next. So I have my colleague in the studio here with me, Mr. Brad McDonald, and maybe you can take us through some of the details of what happened after that.
Sure. Well, like you, I rushed home. I grabbed my bag. I was waiting out by your car, actually. I didn't want to be the one that held up your dad and you guys. So I was waiting there for 5 or 10 minutes. All the students had come out to say goodbye to Mr. Fleury. And then Sam came downstairs and said, well, there's a little issue with the plane. We may not be going. So I kind of asked the students to go back inside. And then I went back inside. And then 15, 20 minutes later, I think your dad made the decision, well, we're just going to go to the airport. So
that's right. We were in the apartment, actually, and Mr. Loker knocked on the door.
Right.
And we had a discussion briefly. And it was still early. I think it was about 5:25, 5:30. And we were scheduled to depart at 6. And I think it's about a 25-minute
right.
car ride to
yeah.
the airport. So we had the discussion. And then that's when my father said, after Mr. Locher weighed in that, well, let's just get in the car and we can go to the airport and at least talk to the pilots.
Right. Yeah. So we're all on the airport. You and your dad were in the front. Sam and your wife and myself were in the back seat. And it was a pretty sad trip. I mean, it wasn't, it definitely wasn't fatalistic.
The car ride you're talking about.
Yeah, the car ride.
We're on our way to the airport. And then like halfway through that, he gets another call.
That's right.
And so he's talking to the pilot then for the second time.
Right. And the pilots were saying the same message. You know, we haven't got this going, Mr. Flurry. We've tried to jumpstart it 4 times now. There's really no chance that there's going to be a starter motor come in over the next hour or so and be installed so you could leave tonight. They were still saying it's just best not to come to the airport. But Mr. Flurry concluded the conversation by saying, well, we're halfway there now. We'll come to the airport. You know, we can have a discussion. So we just kept driving to the airport. And then we arrive at the airport. The Signature Flight Company brings us through security. And then we talked on the tarmac. Well, your dad talked to the pilots on the tarmac.
Well, even before that, when we did park and Signature picked us up, our bigger bags had already been loaded on the plane.
Right.
So we had our carry-on bags. We thought, well, we'll just take everything with us. And then when we parked the car, you know, we were kind of even there going, well, should we take our carry-on bags or are we just going to go out and chat with the...
The bags weren't even on the plane yet.
Okay.
They were all just sitting under the wing because none of us thought we were going.
Right. But we took the carry-on bags on through.
Right.
And then that's when we got to the plane out on the tarmac and the pilots, both of them, the pilot and the co-pilot, came out to talk to my dad.
Right. And they didn't even have their piloting uniform on yet. They were still in their casual clothes because I think they were looking at the situation and just thinking there's no way we're leaving tonight. So they talked to your dad and
he even said, by the way, the best case scenario is we leave tomorrow morning.
Right. Right. Well, they told us on one of those phone conversations that the closest starter motor was in Savannah, Georgia. There wasn't a starter motor on this side of the Atlantic Ocean. So everything looked pretty negative. But then Paris had cooked a really nice meal. So your dad talked to them on the tarmac, the pilots, for 10 or 15 minutes. And then the meal had been cooked and everyone was hungry. It's about 6:15. So he's like, well, we might as well just hop on the plane and eat this meal that's been cooked. So we all hopped on the plane and then we were all joking about how we weren't that hungry. And then as Paris was bringing the meal out, that's when you talked to your dad about, well, what about if you just ask the pilots to jumpstart the plane one more time? So the pilot came back and I was sitting right next to your dad and the pilot as they were having this conversation. And the pilot kind of went through all of the pros and cons of jumpstarting the plane one more time. And Mr. Flurry just listened to him for 4 or 5 minutes. And then at the end, he's like, well, can we do it? And the pilot said, well, it's your plane, Mr. Flurry. I'll do it. And your dad said, well, okay, I think we'll give it one more go. So then they took a few minutes to get everything ready and get everything connected. And then your dad went up to the cockpit. You went up to the cockpit with your dad. Then one of the pilots went to the back of the plane. He grabbed a broomstick. And then you can hear them on the radio kind of talking to each other. They have to do some kind of pre warm up before they can press the button to start the plane. So they were talking, and me and your wife and Mrs. Turgeon, Paris and Chris and Panay, we were all just praying. No one had eye contact. We were all just looking out the window, but we all knew what the other person was doing. So then we just sat there in anticipation and you know, the pilot was talking your dad through it. You know, he's explaining all the different buttons and the little gauges. And I didn't hear it, but there was one gauge, and I heard him talking to your dad saying, okay, so this is the gauge. We need this gauge to get to 100. When we jump-started it the previous 4 times, it never got over 10, I don't think. So that gauge was the critical gauge that everyone was watching. So then they finally got to the point where he's like, okay, let's do it. So he pressed the button, and I'm not sure if you saw the gauge, but your dad definitely watched the gauge.
Right.
And, well, I think in the video, in the soundbite you're about to play, you can kind of hear the pilot saying, it's at 2, it's at 3, it's at 5, it's at 6, And then it gets up to 10. I think it got up to 12, your dad said. And then it went down a little bit, back down to 10. But then it went back up. And then back, you know, we didn't see the gauge, but we could hear the engines just kind of roaring.
Right.
And I was just saying a silent prayer, and I just didn't stop praying, like, right until the end, until I heard the shrieks.
And that's what you can hear on this clip we'll play for you here. The engines are definitely revving up, and then once they are finally off and running, then you can hear some of our lovely passengers excitedly reacting to the plane starting. Here's a clip.
Okay, fuel pump coming on. And start coming on. We got 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10. It's staying in just over 10.
So you can see the excitement or hear the excitement there from the passengers. What you didn't hear was one of the pilots who said that Mr. Gerald Fleury has the magic touch. So he was excited. The pilots were excited. We had missed our original departure time at 6 p.m. So we had another one set for 8:30 p.m. We went ahead and stayed on board, obviously, as the engines were running. We had dinner, I think, around 7. We took off at 8:30. And then ended up getting to Jerusalem or to the Tel Aviv airport, I think at 3:30 a.m., early Monday morning, instead of around 1 a.m. So as it happens, we're just two and a half hours late on the arrival. But some excitement following the online pack. And also we've learned since while being here in Israel that the part that we need to replace on the plane, it'll be at Birmingham when we get back on Wednesday, and it should be just a simple matter of exchanging that part over the course of maybe 30 or 40 minutes. So everything should be good to go for when we get back after we jump-start it again here in Israel, and they've got all the equipment to do that, no problem. And then, of course, my father and his traveling party will eventually make their way back to America later this week. All right, with that, we will transition into some of the emails, quite a few emails, in fact, that have come in over the last couple of days in response to the online appearance campaign that we had on Sunday afternoon. This first one actually comes from Iran, of all places. It says here, I woke up early to watch it, but my VPN failed. So I'm tweeting from Iran. That's pretty amazing. Even one potential listener or viewer from the Islamic State of Iran. Another one here from Singapore. It says, how exciting to see you live thundering God's message. Thank you for reviewing the history of the last two eras of church history. A marvelous reminder of the momentous work God did through Mr. Armstrong. Very much looking forward to future live telecasts from you proclaiming God's vision and hope. Another one from, that was from Singapore, this one from Vietnam. It says, I'm watching the live broadcast from Vietnam, and my family is watching from South Africa. We're a total of 5 people. I appreciate all the spiritual food that I'm able to receive. Thank you for this additional nourishment. This one here comes from Colombia, down in Central America. It says, what a wonderful way of sending God's message to the world. I'm watching from Colombia, South America. And then another one from South Africa. It says, that was awesome to be part of such an awesome work and a wonder. It says, it was a wonderful message that you gave, and we can only thank God for such technology that allows so many people from so many countries to actually hear the message. Please pass our regards to Richard Palmer, whom we heard before the broadcast began, and we know he did not realize that we could actually hear him speaking, and commenting about the lapel mic. It provided some good laughter on my side. Have an awesome and rewarding trip to Jerusalem. And will you please also give much love to your father and also your family? We did have a few of the off-air comments that that's one thing about a live YouTube broadcast that we're still trying to become more familiar with. We did have one email that said we heard a few other things that was going on right before the broadcast. So we're trying to make sure that we're as careful as we can be, and hopefully next time that happens, we'll lock down all of those potential problem areas. This one here comes from the United States. It says, so much enjoyed the presentation. Great inspirational message. Always so blessed to hear the encouraging words of Mr. Armstrong. That's speaking of the audio clips that we played on during the pack. It says, great audio, even greater message. May we hear all the events of the Jerusalem trip soon. Prayers for safekeeping while there. This one here comes from England. It says, thank you for your presentation that I was privileged to watch and take note of today. A few hiccups, but nothing to take my concentration from what you had to say. A terrific God-inspired message, which I was pleased to learn went successfully around the world into different time zones. I listen to your daily radio show and look forward to whoever finds themselves filling in for you when you're busily doing other work. I hope all goes well on your trip with your father to Jerusalem. I pray for you and your father every day, along with all the other ministers who serve God's people around the world. That comes from England. This one here from New Zealand. Really, really great responses, even from some of our coworkers. It says here, I'm blown away to think that at 5 a.m. Monday in New Zealand, I can watch Mr. Fleury from England live. The technology I've seen in my lifetime is amazing. God sure has given men great talents for good. Sadly, we also use them for evil. It says here, God is calling me and has been for a long time, and I now want to respond by asking for a minister to visit me. Again, another one along these same lines says here, I just watched the OAC. It was wonderful. Thank you so much. It was absolutely compelling. It was as if you were speaking to me personally. I really think God has been leading me to seriously consider contacting you about meeting with one of your ministers. I just feel I must do something with this information. So that's one of, I think Edwin tells me that's one of maybe 12 or 13 requests that we had following the online appearance campaign for a ministerial visit, just from the program that we produced right from our Edstone studio. Very encouraging response. This one here comes from the Trinidad. It says, congratulations to you and the staff for a great online campaign on Sunday. We ended up having about 37 of the brethren meeting at our hall to view the broadcast. It was especially appreciated by some of them who do not have internet access to be able to view it at their homes. Afterwards, almost everyone stayed back to talk about it, and we made it into a lunch social. Very enjoyable. So that's one connection where it serviced 37 people. Another listener or viewer from Edmond says, excellent broadcast today, sir. Our family of four watched with our one connection. Then this one here from a group up in Minnesota, it says, thanks for the inspiring OAC today. We were able to watch it with several people from the Minnesota congregation and enjoyed robust fellowship afterwards. So just like the group there in Trinidad, it says, looking forward to and praying about the fruits that it will produce around the world. Take care and have a productive time in Jerusalem. We can hardly wait to hear news about the trip. So we did get quite a few emails of people that said there were four or five of us that listened in. And then a few, like I said, there from Trinidad and Minnesota, where there were small congregations gathering together. So it's hard to say how many people in total viewed the online appearance campaign on Sunday. But with more than 1,000 connections, it's probably safe to say there were 2,000 to 3,000 people watching worldwide. This one here comes from Washington State. It says, watching and praying For the live broadcast in real time, it says, striving to stay on track on this end. Thanks for all your efforts. Holding the line and got your back, albeit on our knees. Another viewer writes from Australia saying, greetings from Brisbane in the early hours of the morning. It's so exciting to see this incredible tool that God has provided for the work to be used to reach a large audience. Another one here coming from Botswana. It says the time here in Botswana is 18:50 hours or 6:50 in the evening, I guess. The reception is very clear. Clearly, God's hand is in this project. Keep up the good work. And then another one here from our family in Jerusalem. It says, thanks so much for putting this together. All four of us watching here in Jerusalem. Hopefully, there are more from Israel to come. A viewer from Brazil, down in South America, says, a big hello from Brazil. What a great wonder we're a part of. Thank you so much to all who are involved in this this warning and teaching the world the truth, the Word of God. Switching back to the United States, this viewer says, just wanted to let you know that your online pack is coming through beautifully and that many prayers for the success of this project are being offered to our great God, praying that God's message through you and your father breaks through the sleeping and stony hearts. It says, thank you and your father for all that you do to serve our father, his family, and the beautiful seeds being sown throughout the world. Another one coming from America says, I was putting some passion in prayer for this historic day in God's church. This came in just before the broadcast on Sunday morning. It says, especially that your message will be inspiring and stir the hearers to action. It occurred to me this online approach may have some Ezekiel 33 implications on the walls and houses in light of the high mountain possibility for God's message to Judah. Everyone is using it. It's frustrating how dumb these devices have made everyone around us. But thanks for your service. Your example stirs me to action. Another viewer writing from Oregon says, how exciting to be part of this historic moment. Thank you. Thank you for your direct and timely message. Very thankful to be part of God's work in this pivotal time in man's history. Another one comes in from two viewers, I believe, in Belgium. It says, fantastic. What a privilege to be able to receive this first pack online for the first time, which is even followed by our brethren and sisters in Adelaide at 2:30 a.m. Thank you to our great God, and thank you all who are so dedicated to give this message to the world. Hold fast, hang on. We're behind you to support this great work of God. I think I might have mentioned during the live broadcast, those few that were listening in, from Australia, right in the middle of the night. And so here are two other viewers from Belgium commenting on that. It says here, this is from North Carolina. My wife and I watched the program from North Carolina, and we pray that more people will join our history-making family, raising the ruins for our Father God. Another one comes in from South Africa. It says, would like to thank you for an inspiring and rejuvenating online campaign. It's exciting to hear about new developments in the work. We'll continue to pray for more open doors and that our Father will invigorate us to finish this race so that we can hasten the return of Jesus Christ. Another one here, this was in our trumpet brief that went out last night, but it says here, I stopped my 18-wheeler on the way down to Florida to watch your personal appearance campaign. It's a blessing and much needed prodding. Thank you very much. Another one here coming from Tennessee says, thank you for sharing this revelation, prophecy, and invaluable education with us. We are a family of five. We appreciate the technological advances that we're seeing happen over the last few years with this program. Seeing Mr. Fleury present these astounding truths is an experience we cannot get anywhere else. Thank you for reaching the largest audience possible and giving this family great conversation to talk about together. Well, we certainly would echo that. We've had a lot to talk about over the last few days. We ourselves, as we've had this trip to Jerusalem, and of course, we've had a lot of discussion about the online campaign on Sunday. And that, like I said, even in the message itself on Sunday, when you think about God's work and what he's doing, it is a vision. It is a work filled with hope. Another one here coming from the Philippines. It says, just done watching the one-hour online appearance campaign via my mobile phone, which started at 12 midnight, Philippine Standard Time. It says, here's hoping that the PCG will even tap into more of the wonders of this modern technology so the world will know the imminent coming of Jesus Christ. That comes from the Philippines. And this one here, switching back to continental Europe, comes from the Netherlands. It says, two of us watching on our laptop the live appearance campaign in the Netherlands. It was wonderful to see such a strong message go out. Makes us thirst for more. Just a few more here. This one here from North Carolina. It says, our family of three watched the pack and found it very inspirational as we continue to support Raising the Ruins. Thanks for adding in the voice of Herbert Armstrong, a wonderful reminder of days of our youth in the Youth Opportunities United program back in Worldwide Church of God. Also, remembering the books and booklets that were done away with, now available because of that six-year court battle, a reference there again to some of the history that I mentioned in that online appearance campaign. That message, by the way, as some have asked, we'll make, I think we're going to try to make a TV program out of half of it in the next couple of weeks. So you can be looking for that at the trumpet.com website, and we'll try to move as much of that information out in other ways in the upcoming days and weeks ahead. A couple more emails to conclude here. It says from Sri Lanka, thank you for the live broadcast. I watched it from Sri Lanka. I agree with the message that many of us have lost the sense of urgency. And then finally, one final one coming from the Midwest of the United States. It says, our family excitedly tuned in at 10 a.m. from our home in the Midwest to watch the first online pack. What courage it takes to pilot such a production. What a faithful endeavor. Thank you, and thank the crew for your diligent efforts. So quite a few have responded. I think something like 200, 250 responses in total, counting what came in during the show and what came in just before and what came in just after. So we certainly do appreciate everyone chiming in. We thank you for your support. We thank you for all the enthusiasm. And as I said, even during the live presentation on Sunday, hopefully it will be the first of many more to come. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, if you'd like to submit your feedback, you can do that, as always, by sending an email to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today here in Jerusalem, and we'll see you next time.